Hello, and welcome to Mike M's Weekly Reads. It's Friday, and I'm looking forward to a long week because I'm taking the week off. So this is going to be great. wanted to talk about some comics, but before I get into the comics, I put out a request for questions, and I want to thank Ronnie Barron for giving me some fuel. I really appreciate when I get questions and I ask for them. The first question is, I know you're enjoying Titans and the appearance of Doom Patrol. If you could pick a show to come out on the DCU, what would it be? Live action or animated? You know I am a creature of wandering, I'm like Homer Simpson in a donut shop. Or like a dog that sees a squirrel. I switch all the time. But right now, where my mood is right now, is World War II war comic. So, having said that, I would absolutely love a Sergeant Rock TV show, live action. And if it was like the comic book where you could read like an adventure every month and still follow an ongoing theme about being in the war, but having a sort of beginning, middle, and end in each episode, I think it would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So I would love to see a Sergeant Rock. Live action TV show. I know I may never, but man, to see Sergeant Rock in Easy Company and my favorite Ice Cream Soldier. Ah, oh, yeah, Bulldozer. Ah, oh, they could just do that nobody story that brought tears to my eye, where Sergeant Rock is busy with his Easy Company. They get a new guy, and he doesn't give him a nickname. He never became part like a unit because he never spoke much. He was the silent one. And Rock puts him up front in a foxhole by himself. He says, "You're okay with being by yourself overnight?" And he just nodded. And he sits there in the foxhole, and the Nazis come and they attack that night. And there's a fierce fire, and he's got one of those automated machine guns and that. And you just hear, and there's this awesome firefight, and like Rock says, it's one of the worst fight nights ever. And they all get out of their foxholes in the morning, go check on this guy, and he's dead in his foxhole, hanging over his gun, and he's just dead, and nobody knew him. And there's just bodies of Nazis everywhere. They're all fucking dead. He killed them, and he's like, Sergeant Rock felt bad, and he goes, "I'll always remember Nobody," and that's how he got his nickname, Nobody. And yeah, it brings a goddamn tear to my eye because it's fucking awesome, and I don't know, it was real emotional, it's powerful. Oh, man, Rock, and then like having Rock, like he doesn't, he never sends his men to do something he's not willing to do himself. So like Rock will, he'll do scouts because he says, "My men are great, but they might not use all of their, I use sight, smell, taste, everything to just be aware of my surroundings." And he is out scouting, and he's walking, and he smells something, and he's like, "That smells like cigarette smoke." And he moves a little further, real cautiously, and sure enough, there's a Nazi inside of that tank. And he essentially shoots the guy that's hanging out of the tank, smoking the cigarette, and then the tank starts moving like it's gonna blow him up. And then Rock just throws a grenade, knowing that the grenade is not gonna do anything to a tank, but it throws it in the front, and it kind of just gives him enough of a distraction. And then Rock goes in like where that little slit is in the tank, and he gets his machine gun and he's like, da-da-da-da-da, and it's going ting 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 off of the tank because it's like bouncing off of everybody. It's like ricocheting off of everything. Ta-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he kills all of them. And then he comes back. And there's a captain and with a lieutenant, and he's like chewing Rock's ass. He's like, "What's the matter with you? You're a leader. You should be leading your men. You have other men scout for you." And he's like, "No, I need to do this." And he goes, "What if you get killed?" And then Rock's like, "Oh yeah, I can understand where you're coming from, Captain, but..." So he says, "The next t I'm leaving the lieutenant behind, and with you, he's going to be monitoring Easy Company, and I want you to send somebody else out scouting." So he sends out little, I can't remember if it's Short Round or Little Sure Shot. I think it's Little Sure Shot. So he sends out Little Sure Shot. Little Sure Shot goes out. Rock's like, "That's weird. He should have been back by now. He didn't come back." "Oh man." And then he said, "Maybe I should go look for him." And the lieutenant's not, "Uh-uh, you send somebody else." So he sends Bulldozer, and Bulldozer goes out, He goes out, and he doesn't come back, and he's like, "Something's wrong." He tells that lieutenant, "Something's wrong. We need to go out. I need to go out and check on my men. I love my men. I need to go check on my men." He goes out, and the lieutenant goes with him, and they go into a small town. They see a few guys eating, with French berets and stuff. Rock's like looking, and he's like, "These motherfuckers have machine guns in their fucking laps. There's something going on." And then Little Sure Shot and Bulldozer push a Nazi off the roof because they're tied up. They were captured. Matter of fact, the Nazis are, "We're using you as bait to draw in your company so we can just slaughter them." And Little Sure Shot and Bulldozers are like, "Fuck you, man. I'm not gonna let you kill the guys, the men that I love." And they push him off the roof, a Nazi, and Rock knows immediately. And then Rock and then the guy just bring out their guns and start shooting something. And then even though Little Sure Shot and Bulldozer are tied up, they manage to, knock the Nazis away so they can jump off the roof and land okay. And they ended up killing all those people, and they get back to camp. And that lieutenant is very wise on how Rock is, and he tells the captain, he tells him, "Hey, Rock knows what he's doing. Gotta listen to the Rock." So yeah, I would like to, that's a long answer for you, Ronnie, but I love a Sergeant Rock, World War II. And he could run into all kinds of people, like, oh, he could run into Gravedigger. Gravedigger's phenomenal. I just read 1 through 3 of Men of War, and I would like to do more research on this to see how, where this came from. But I did do a little research, and they really had World War II gravediggers, and their whole purpose is like when they invaded a beach or something, they would go, after things were quiet and clean, they would go take care of the bodies. I don't know how they had disposed of them, but they did. They disposed of them, probably got all their dog tags off and did various activities. And at World War II, there was some racism and stuff, and there was a captain again holding down this guy, Gravedigger Ulysses. And he was a guy that was born very much like Captain America. He was weak. He never got a super soldier serum, but he had polio growing up. He had trouble walking, and he kind of just built himself up to be this optimal human without super soldier serum, and wanted to help his country. So yeah, he was a grave digger. And one night, the him and his buddy saw a plane overhead. And they're, "Holy crap, that guy's aiming for us." So the plane is coming around. It's killing everybody. His friend jumped in front of that white captain. The Gravedigger is black. So is everybody that was in the Gravedigger crew here were black. And he jumps in front of that white captain and takes a bullet for him. And he said, "That guy saved your life. You got to let me get revenge on these people, you know, Gravedigger." And he became disenfranchised because he's like, "Just because of my skin color, I can't fight for my brother. You're not going to let me seek vengeance." Because so he escaped, and that's a court martial, you know. But he went back to the Pentagon, and he invaded the Pentagon and found somebody there that would listen to him, and he took out like a bunch of MPs to get where he was at. Like I said, "You're pretty badass. I'm gonna promote you, and you're gonna go back into the war and fight for me." Although that white guy that gave him that position, though, was mischievous. Like he had this weird wink in his eye, like, I'm gonna probably lead this guy to his death." And I'm not gonna tell you any more about that because I did delve into it in another podcast. But he could run into Gravedigger. He could run into the losers. He could run into Unknown Soldier. You can't run into enemy ace because that's World War I. But matter of fact, I was reading a letters column. I like to read the letters card column. I think it's in Sergeant Rock, and he's like, "Man, I would love for Rock to team up with Batman and Enemy Ace." And the editor, being a real jackass at the time, and I guess not being aware of Elseworlds or anything, he kind of says, "You realize that Enemy Ace is in World War I. They can't meet, and Batman's in Gotham City in present time. How could that happen?" Well, you have the brave and the bold, my friend. That's what he should have answered with. He should have said, "You got the brave and the bold, and we might consider it. Matter of fact, why not have a Batman, Sergeant Rock, and Enemy Ace?" All right, that was a long-winded question. Let me go to another question. What is your favorite Rebirth book series to have come out? I know you love them all, but pick one that you like way more than the others. I don't stay as current as you do, Ronnie. If I read like you, it'd drive me crazy. You like read from week to week, and you want everything new. I tend to let things stockpile, so. And then more or less read them like a trade. In the DC world, what do I absolutely love? Favorite Rebirth. Okay. I'm trying to circle through everything that's being published in my head right now and pick something. And it's getting tough. Because it changes. It changes every time, every week. I could tell you something different. I'm trying to think of something that's been the most consistent, the most consistent read for me. I would say the Superman books, because even though they've drastically changed, like right now, I am still really digging Brian Michael Bendis. So I would say like they're my most consistent since Rebirth, because New 52 didn't so much dig it. And then Superman came, and Action Comics came, Dan Jurgens, and why am I not thinking of their names now? I'm blanking on it. I'll be right there. I gotta look up their names or it's gonna drive me crazy. Da 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 boop 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 boop. Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. I kept on thinking of Patrick Gleason because I think he's gonna draw Young Justice, but I couldn't get his name out. Getting old. And Peter Tomasi. So I think one of them, Peter Tomasi, may be going to write Detective Comics, and Patrick Gleason, I think, is moving to Young Justice. But they really brought Superman back for me, like to a level that I've really, really enjoyed. And then Bendis took over, and I didn't know what to expect. I usually like Bendis. So I'm pretty much on the Bendis bandwagon. And I like what he did. And I'm fairly caught up on it. So I could say like it's the most consistent. Batman, not the most consistent. It's kind of rocky for me. Green Lantern has decreased since Morrison took over for me. Flash has been pretty consistent, but I'm not caught up. Aquaman's been really good, consistent. Two of my titles that I really enjoy are Hawkman and Plastic Man, but they're not like on, well, I think Plastic Man's a mini. Hawkman is an ongoing. Venditti, I like his writing. I like his style. So that's pretty much an answer. It's the Superman books. I'll go with Action and Superman. I think they've been really consistent for me. The next question, Batman 66 versus the $6 Million Man. Who would win? Well, if you think about the times, $6 Million Man was 70s-ish. 66, Batman 66 was so campy that I'd have to put the $6 Million Man as the winner just because of the nature of where they are, and what the shows were. But it would be interesting to see a crossover. Ronnie says, if you could stay a week someplace, any place, anywhere in the world, where would you and Barb end up? Because you say Barb and me, I'm gonna try to make I would like to go on like a European vacation, but it would have to be a long one. And just visit, like, I'd like to go on like a castle tour. I've always liked castles. And to see all those castles in England and France and all those places, Germany, I think it would be a really awesome thing to do. Like to go on some kind of castle tour and just see how other people live. I mean, it would be interesting. Let's see. Okay, that was the last question. I just finished listening to Nerdy Legion, and there's some banter going back because they were talking about ASM, and I didn't know what the hell it is. Because ASM to me has always been Amazing Spider-Man. You know, they have codes and order forms, and I mean ASM has always been Amazing Spider-Man. And I learned that ASM is like a whispering thing, and sometimes sexually. And you can go to YouTube and see some of this, like a girl whispering about chewing gum or taking off some stockings. Well, that's ASM. I didn't know what it was. I know what ATM is, automatic teller machine, or where you get your money, but it's also ass to mouth. That means that you put your wiener in, usually in a butthole, and then you put it in the mouth. That's what. So there's a lot of double acronyms. You got to be careful of what you Google on, you know. You don't want to go Google on nearest ATM. You might have some really nasty photos show up. So listen to Nerdy Legion and check that out tonight. It's my night off, so what I'm probably going to do is watch a show with Barb. We're almost caught up on Riverdale. That show has gone off the rails because it's in the D&D realm, and I hate D&D and role playing. I not that I've ever done it. I just don't like it. I've never had the urge to do it. So now that they're in this like murder mystery, I'm kind of losing interest, but I'm gonna fight my way through it because Archie's still in prison, and I want to find out what happens to him. So this week has been a huge week for comics. Okay, I received two DCBS boxes because one came in from the following week on a Monday instead of a Friday, and one came in this Friday, and then I had another box come in, which was a My Comic Shop dot calm. And then I had another box I had no idea was even coming, but Keith Cunningham was kind enough to he's getting ready to move somewhere, and I guess he was packaging things and he thought of me. And it's very rare, especially 'cause I don't talk to Keith a lot. You know, like we'll talk to we were much closer when Geek Brunch was Geek Brunch proper. It changed a lot. When it was me and Heath Holland doing Geek Brunch, we had like a brunch buddy concept. So I think we got like 30, maybe it's 20 episodes in, and Heath had an idea to every episode to bring in a brunch buddy, and Keith got to know us through Geek Brunch, and we even met him at the first Geek Brunch meetup at Heroes Con, and I don't think I've missed a Heroes Con since then, and that was like very early Geek Brunch, so I've been, getting on a plane every year and going to North Carolina and visiting friends. But Keith is an artist. He does some comics. He's an artist and writer. He's done a lot for me personally. And nobody's asked him to do anything, but two things that come to mind that have been very special to me is he used to draw a comic book about movie theaters, but he took a concept of me and my wife. Our first date was on Halloween, so that we celebrate our together anniversary since we've been together, and we knew each other before that. We were really, really good friends, and then we celebrate our wedding anniversary, but it was a very special night that I had told Keith about. I was like, we sort of had a date. We're gonna go to a movie, but that day we decided to dress up, and this is very unlike me. I don't normally dress up, but for some reason Barb dressed up as a mime, and I dressed up as Freddy Krueger. And I went to school like that. I had the hat. I had the sweatshirt torn up. I had the face with gunk hanging off my face. My dad made me this like I would have been banned if I took it to school today, 'cause it had three blades, almost like Wolverine, hanging off of a glove, and the glove was cloth, but it had a metal backing, and these three blades, the blade was, man, it was about 10 inches long, maybe as 12 inches, and I had these three blades, and I wore the glove all day, and those were sharp motherfuckers, man. And well, anyway, we had a good day. We went to school, we did our things, we were dressed up. We hadn't kissed for the first time. We weren't going out. A matter of fact, I remember going to her house, and we were doing some math or studying prior to that. I was always in, a decent student, like A's and B's, mostly A's. And I would take like really high up math classes, but Barb is smarter than me. So she was in even a higher math class. So we had math classes together, and we kind of would study sometimes, but that night we were going to go on a date to see a movie. And usually when we did stuff prior to this, we would do it with other friends. And this time it was really like a date. And we went to go see Top Gun. Yeah, on Halloween, we went to go see Top Gun. But that was kind of like our first kiss and our date. And anyway, Keith took that material and drew it into a comic book. And I think there was like four, maybe five pages. And that was really special. And then, like, I don't talk to him much, but he understands my passion for comics. Like, very, I mean, there's probably like a handful of people that really know I mean, they really know how much I love comics. Like they get it. They don't, I mean, yeah, there's people that know I have a lot of comics, but they don't get like my passion. But my very close friends get my passion for comics. Like I love comics. Like they're just fucking amazing. And he did a picture for me, and I should go get it and tell you what it says, but it's really emotional. I look at it a lot because it's just me reading under a tree and talking about like my passion. And it's like, thank you for, bringing out the passion, because I don't know, it means a lot to me, but those things are pretty freaking amazing. I have great friends, and yeah, fuck, I tear up. God damn it, I get emotional because I love people. I love people that they, I don't know. It's just fucking weird. But where was I going? Oh, he sent me a box, and I don't know if Keith listens to Geek Brunch anymore. But he sent me a box of comics, and the weird thing is, I was like, did you know about this, Barb? And Barb said, well, he said something about it, and I guess he IM'd Barb and said, maybe refreshed our address or whatever, even though it hadn't changed. And he sent a bunch of stuff, and it's really weird that everything he sent me, I did not own. Like, I was like, he sent me something from Marcosia. Two things from Marthias Wade that I didn't own. He sent me a Wolverine title, Snicked, that I never had. Nine panel grid starter kit, Aim to Dazzle one shot. Sam Keith and Alex Pardy on Ojo. Like, honey, how did he know I didn't fucking have that? A Kyle MacDonald mystery, Hairball. That's Steve Niles, and I thought I had all of it. Comics, but I didn't have that. He sent me a comic called Lore from IDW. He sent me Snicked, like I said, a Wolverine miniseries, a Kabuki that I didn't own, and some Heroes Alliance comics, Hero Initiative. So, like, he nailed it. He sent me a DVD. I did own that, but I'm going to share the wealth with somebody else to watch Batman Returns Part 1. But yeah, that was really phenomenal. So thank you, Cunningham. I know you probably don't listen to this, but I thanked you. And I really appreciate your friendship. And I hope to see you at a convention again soon. So that was going down a little bit of memory lane. Man, this could be a fucking long ass episode. But mycomicshop.com order. So I'm starting to fill in some holes of Batman. I got 268, which Batman's fighting the Sheik. And the Sheik is on, it might be a camel, but the camel looks more like something out of a Jurassic Park. But the Sheik is saying, "On your knees, Batman, bow to the man you can never defeat, the Sheik." The next one has somebody coming after Batman with a bunch of maces, and he's protecting some sexy girl. It looks like an Ernie Cohen cover. It's 269. The next one is 271. Has Batman. He's getting shot on this idol, like he's on top of this golden idol, and he's saying, "Fire away, little man. Nothing can kill the Batman," and the bullets are bouncing off of him. And then you got 273, which is a big cannon. These gangsters are holding Batman's body to the cannon, and they're getting ready to fire. And it says, "Now, Batman, see Europe and die." And they're gonna like shoot him in the back, I guess. With a cannon. So that's pretty cool. So I got those, and very close to completing the goal on Batman and Detective. It's a little slower process because they cost a little more. Like things are a little more expensive in the Batman world because they never go down. I have a lot of Batman comics prior, especially from the 60s and like a long run of them. But I'm trying to get continuously everything from 1973 and Batman Detective, and I'm getting very close. Very, very close. I got Our Army at War, number 151. And why is this one so important? Well, it's a really nice copy of the first appearance of, guess, not Sergeant Rock. Not Gravedigger. I already have that. Not Unknown Soldier. Come on, you're getting close. Who? Is it GI Combat? No. Is it Nahana Tank? No. Is it The Losers? No, I already have that. It is Enemy Ace, World War I Enemy Ace. So I picked up a very important, it was the most expensive book that I bought. From that order, but what I've been doing is I've been queuing up Key War Heroes. My next one, you'll be surprised on who that is. First appearances, shooting for him. I then went on a. This was just a random thing. Maybe it was influenced by Martin. Subconsciously, things happen. But I think they were talking about Ash, and I was like, you know what? I never read Palmiotti and Quesada on Ash, so maybe I should check that out. And I ordered the first two series, Ash, from Event Comics, and Ash, Cinder, and Smoke, which is not them, but I think it's Mark Waid actually, Waid, Augustine, and Ramos. With Palmiotti inks, but the first series is definitely, and I got the full run of both those series. So Ash, Cinder, and Ash, and Ash proper, including the Wizard One Half issue. So then I said, you know what? I just completed Indiana Jones, the Further Adventures of Indiana Jones from Marvel. Maybe there's some other Marvel Indiana Jones I need to get. So I decided to get all the movies. I got The Last Crusade 1 through 4 of Indiana Jones. I got Indiana Jones The Temple of Doom 1 through 3 full run adaptations, and I got Raiders of the Lost Ark number 1 through 3. Love those movies, and now I get to read them in comic format. I've never owned them before, but I have full runs of them now. Then I have some big news coming up. Big news. Wow, I got another question. And I have one for you. But I completed Marvel Spotlight. It's kind of a big thing. So I was missing Marvel Spotlight number 11, which featured the Witch Woman, and he's fighting Ghost Rider, and she's saying, "So you received your superpowers from Satan, did you? Well, so did I." And she's blasting him off of his bike. And then I got Marvel Spotlight number 30, which features Fandral, Hogan, and Volstagg, the Warriors Three. And now I have a full run of Marvel Spotlight. But most important, I have a full run of Ghost Rider Marvel Spotlight and Son of Satan. Those are the two thing characters that drew me to that title. Now I have the first appearance of Hellstorm because he's in Ghost Rider. But then I completed Ghost Rider Volume 1. Number 11 was the only issue I bought, and it has Hulk getting ready to crush Ghost Rider. And it says, hint, the Incredible Hulk. Oh, it says, is he alive or dead? Hint, The Incredible Hulk prefers the later, and he is going to make sure. It's the deadliest cycle race of all time. Join the Desolation Run if you dare. So I completed Ghost Rider Volume 1, Marvel Spotlight, where he first appeared, and then I completed. Yay! I've been waiting for this book. It's been showing up. It hasn't. It's been not available on my comic shop, and I got an email. This is what actually drove the purchase. I got the email saying this book finally showed up. It was Ghost Rider Annual Number 2. So this completes my Ghost Rider Volume 2. I think I own every other Ghost Rider after that. I have to do a double check because there's some minis and stuff I might not have. But I think that does it. We then get into a title I had no issues of. We got Secrets of Haunted House, number 1 from 1975. This one's important because it's the first appearance of Destiny. We then have Secrets of Haunted House, number 31. First appearance of Mr. E. Very awesome. Yep. So I'm excited about that. And then I finally completed Dog Witch, which was some serious comics. And what drove me to this is my fascination with the writer slash artist. And I now own all his works of Daniel Schafer. He's the one that did one of that shark book. He did a couple of ones that we talked about on Geek Brunch. And I really love his work. He tends to do like psychotic type books, like with people with mental illness. The shark one was different, but everything in that vein, horror slash mental illness. And I finally completed Dog Witch, another series which I had queued up, but my comic shop did not have the issues, and I was having a hard time finding them personally. So they finally got those, and it drove that purchase. And then I got some current stuff. House of Wax, number 1 and 2. What drove this is Bill Bomer had bought House of Wax, and he's like, "What the fuck? You didn't buy that?" Well, it's from Waxwork Comics, and I bought 1 and 2. And then I also bought Poser number 2, which I was introduced to. But Comic Talk today, I think Martin interviewed the guy, and I said that sounds like my wheelhouse, so I'll give it a shot. Then I bought a slew of Captain Americas. I'm not gonna go into all of them, but they were filling in holes, and they ranged from 234 all the way to 442. And there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So there was 12 issues, and that pretty much gives me like a run from like 180 something on, like continuous, and minus 2 books, which I have queued up for my next order, so I should have a continuous run. And then I have like the expensive ones early on, like 100, 101, 102, one, and then I'm missing like 104, and then a slew of when they get into the Kirby years with Captain America and the Falcon. I have a lot of those, but I don't have them all. But my goal is to finish Captain America Volume 1. I then bought Morlock 2001 Midnight Man. It's to complete a dead universe from Atlas Comics. And I still miss number 2, but that one's queued up on my next order just so I have a full run. There's only 3 issues. From DCBS, I forgot to order Psycho. I have purchased all of Alterna Comics, and I somehow missed Psycho KO, and I was missing number 1, and I picked that up. Just randomly, sometimes I just start going through Comic Base and say, "Ooh, have it all, have it all, have it all, all happy. Ooh, I'm missing one issue." I was missing number six, the final issue of Xenobro from DC Comics. And now I have it's by Doug Munch, and I guess the last name of the artist is Hunter, and I don't know who that is. But six issue mini completed it. And then you see how all this weird shit like links up. Like got a we were talking about our top movies and that were sci-fi from the 70s and 80s. It was a question from Martin on Retro. And it was a good question. It was like telling me some of your top three sci-fi and also your top three horror. And I tried to dig deep. I said, you know what? I'm gonna rule out Star Trek and Star Wars because those are my favorite. Well, I hated Star Trek, the motion picture, but when Wrath of Khan came out, that's fucking badass. Like, I loved it. And everything beyond that, I really liked it. I even love Star Trek V. What, is it five where they go talk to God? Yeah, I think it is, because three search for Spock. Four is the whales, I think. And five is where they go talk to God. And six is one of my favorites. But I really like that God one. It's the one that's most panned. But I don't know why I like it. But they're going to visit God with I think it was the brother of Spock. So but anyway, why I get on these rapid tangents? Because this guy. One of the questions was, sci-fi, and I was like thinking, what are my top sci-fi movies? And I picked Last Starfighter. I was like, that one, absolutely love that movie. Yeah. About video games and him being recruited to save all these universes because he passes the test by playing a video game, goes into space and fights this war in this awesome ship. An alien partner, always loved it. Well, I'm getting to my point, don't worry. Last Starfighter was a three-issue miniseries. I was missing one, and I purchased it. I then was in like the W's and X's under DC, and I'm like, Wasteland. Now that was a really whack series back in the day by Del Close and John Ostrander. And Del Close, like, even would tell you that when he did these stories, he was under the heavy influence of drugs. But, so if you like Grant Morrison, you may want to pick up Wasteland. But, Wasteland's an odd series, but I was missing only one issue of that and picked up number 16. I then had a misorder and never ordered Cemetery Beach, and Bill talked about it on Geek Brunch, and I picked it up. I've been going on this binge on Charlton Comics, and I got across Scary Tales. I had in a previous order, I bought number two and three, and I needed number one, and I did order number one, but I guess when they fulfilled the order, they ran out, so I didn't get it, and now I have it, so we're very happy about that in the Myers household. So we're almost getting to the end. I missed. I started reading all the Nightwings to get caught up because I want to get to the current stories. I was missing 25. I purchased that. I had already read it because I didn't want to break the flow. But I can't be missing a DC comic. Come on now. So. I had already bought it digitally. That's when I like digital. I like the convenience of it. I didn't want to break my flow of reading, so I read it digitally, and then I said, "Hey, gotta add that to my order," and purchased it. And finally, I was missing Clan Killers number two. Just a miss on the order form, and picked that up. The cover is really interesting because it takes place in like kingdom, like where the kings are. But if I look at the cover of this, it looks like they're wearing contemporary clothes, and it could be game changing on this series, like to see what's going on. So that's the end. Well, actually, I got one more question. And it's from Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit. I like Drew a lot. I never spoke to him other than on Twitter or what else? Twitter and what is that thing called? The comic book page, forums, and I belong to that Slack channel of there, and I sometimes talk to him there. That's where I got to know Drew, is through the comic book page, and that led me to his own podcast, Comics for Fun and Profit. He took over for Bob Retall, and he was on the comic book page for a long time. And then I followed him over to Comics for Fun and Profit, and has been listening to him religiously ever since. So I listen to both those podcasts religiously. At some point, I'd like to get him on Collector's Corner, not because he's a hardcore collector, but because he's a hardcore collector slash speculator. And I think it'd be an interesting discussion. But because it's like, and he's not just a speculator for profit. He likes to read his comics. Like he likes to read it. So that's also pretty awesome. And I like to talk to people, different people that are just different. And the only one that's close to him is when I interviewed Aaron Myers, but they're very different. Like Aaron Myers likes to accumulate things, but keep a copy of it. Like so, like if he buys an issue, he won't sell it unless he could turn it for high profit, or he has a duplicate, so or it's something he's not interested in but knows he can flip it. I think Drew, for the most part, unless something's personalized, he'll sell it. Like he's willing to sell it. But anyway, he asks the questions of memory of Stan the Man Lee. Well, I've never really talked to the man, but I have met him 3 times indirectly. The very first time is I went to a panel at my very first San Diego Comic-Con, and there is a picture of me with him, but it was one of those weird pictures because he's like down signing something for somebody else as he's walking into the panel. And I was just so excited. I'm like, that's Stan Lee. So I like just shoved my head there, and I'm like, Barb, snap a picture. So his head is like signing something. So you'll see like Stan Lee, and then you'll see my head just like pop in, like in the foreground. So Stan Lee's in my background, and I'm just there, my big fat head sticking there. And there's Stan Lee. That's my first Stan Lee story. I've been to his panels. Another time I saw him was in Albuquerque, and that was kind of special too because I went to that con and my dad was with me. That was unusual because my dad is not in. He got me into comics by taking me to the dump, but he's not into comics. I mean, he likes the art and stuff, but he's never been into reading comics or stuff like that. He understands my passion for it, and has always supported me and my passions. He taught me, hey, comics cost money. If you want all the comics, you got to have a good job. A very valuable lesson early in life, you got to work hard to play hard. This kind of thing. So there's that. And so I saw him at that panel. And then I saw him at one other panel, and that other panel, I don't remember where it was. It might have been out east, but and that would have been Baltimore or Heroes Con, but I think it was Baltimore because I know he had a signing in Baltimore. But I saw him. It might have been Albuquerque again. I don't remember, but there was 1 year I did the most amazing thing. There was Denver Comic Con, there was an Albuquerque Comic Con, And then there was Heroes Con, I believe. And I did all three. And the funny thing about that, and I know this isn't Stan Lee related, but I think Matt Kent thinks I was stalking him because I went to his table every week and I got, drawings, commissions from him and talked to him at all three. And I'm like, I'm not really stalking you. I'm just coincidentally at all the cons that you are. And this is kind of before he really ticked up, got other work. I remember at the first con I went, I bought Super Spy from him and fell in love with it. Matter of fact, the book fell apart on me. I had an allergic reaction to the book glue. That's a funny story all in itself. But where was I going? Oh, Stan Lee. So those are the three times. The one thing, the last time I saw him, he was very hard of hearing, so he had somebody next to him. But the thing that's amazing about going to see Stan Lee at the panels, it might have been Denver Comic Con I saw him. No, but he canceled there, so it can't be Denver Comic Con. I can't remember that third place I saw him. But he's always just so passionate, and he just has this energy. And this, he was old, and he was very lively, always pretty amazing and friendly. Like he never had that I'm gonna be an asshole moment. He was always there talking. Oh, the other time, this is not a very glamorous type story, but at Baltimore Comic Con, or man, I can't remember if it was there or Heroes, but I pissed next to the urinal of Stanley. And that was pretty fucking awesome because not a lot of people can say they pissed next to Stanley. And I was just like, oh fuck, I'm pissing and Stanley's right here. That's awesome. And he always has like a bodyguard that goes with him everywhere and makes sure he's okay. So I wasn't gonna assault him at the urinal, but that I hope that answered your question, Drew. It was actually four times because I forgot about the urinal time. So yeah, and he's always been a great influence. Like my first exposure where I realized that Stan Lee is he would introduce the cartoons. So you watch The Incredible Hulk or Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and he's like, "Hey, true believers, this is Stan Lee." And that's when I really knew him. I didn't read a lot of Stan's Soapbox in the Bronze Age because I was just stupid with the comic book itself. And after the Silver Age, he didn't write as much. He was more of an icon. He still wrote stuff, but not a lot. So he is one of the people that you could always say is like the face of Marvel Comics is Stan Lee. He'll always be that. And I don't think he ever misrepresented himself. He was always there for the fans. Like he knew what comics were, and he knew that people were passionate about them, and he was passionate about them. So he's pretty amazing. So yeah, some good questions. Thank you, Drew. And I talk a lot, man. Let's see what I'm hitting at. I'm already at 1 hour and I haven't even gotten to the weekly reads. But I will get to that. I am going to take a water break and I will be back in a few minutes with the weekly reads. I hope you all enjoy your Thanksgiving vacation or your Thanksgiving. I hope that you and your family or whoever you choose to spend it with love you as much as you love them, and I hope there's no family quarrels over politics or anything, and you could just enjoy your families and have a safe and wonderful holiday. And I hope you actually get to have a holiday. For those of you that don't and have to work, I'm sorry, but hopefully you can have a holiday after that and get to spend time with your loved ones. So, And I feel for you guys that have to work Black Friday. I mean, people aren't friendly. I just saw an episode of Bull, and there was a couple waiting in line for a Black Friday type sale, and it got into a fight, and he pushed a guy defending himself because the guy punched him in the face, and he was protecting his wife, and him and his friends. There was four dudes that attacked him, and he pushed the guy, and he was kind of drunk, and he fell over, and you saw him hit the curb, and he's like, and then a cop broke it up, and they both had to go to court. But a week later, the guy that hit the curb had died from a head injury, went into coma. So yeah, Black Friday shit, not worth it. I'll spend an extra $10 or an extra $50 just to avoid sales. I can understand why you want to get those sales, but man, it's not worth killing yourself over. So, I'll talk to you guys in a bit. Thank you for listening, and I'll be right back. Hello, and welcome back. This is Mike, and I'm here to talk some more comics. Mostly weekly reads, but I got some last-minute questions, and I want to get down to it, because it's from my friend from Down Under. Shane, I need to get you on Mike M's Collector's Corner so we could talk about Australian comics down under. And we could have a share of Vegemite sandwich. Whatever that is, you could tell me what it is. But Shane asks, when are you visiting Australia? You know what? I just had a question about where to visit. Australia would be an awesome place to visit. And it would be awesome to actually meet you in person. So maybe I'll put that in my list of to-dos. Are you reading Thor and Avengers? I am buying Thor and Avengers, but I am behind. But you know what I'm really looking forward to reading from Jason Aaron? I am really looking forward to reading Conan the Barbarian. I am so excited for Conan the Barbarian. I want it to happen. I want those omnibuses to come. I want to finish my collection of Conan. I was late to the game on a lot of Conan. I do own Conan number one, with the Marvel series, and then I have like one through four, and then I have a sporadic amount of Conan. But Avengers, I'm real curious of because the covers has been phenomenal, and I want to see what they're doing with the BC stuff. The Thor, I've heard that it's a decrease in what was there prior with Jane and the other Jason Aaron, but I like to judge for myself, and it might be the best thing ever. I need to get caught up. Are you looking forward to new Jason Aaron? Ribic led Conan. Oh, that was your next question. And yeah, I'm dying to read that. What's your favorite Australian comic book character? Whew. I am gonna answer this based on where I think that character originated from, and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I am gonna go with the Phantom because I think the Phantom. Lee Falker, I think it's generated from Australia, and you might have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I'll go with the Phantom. The only other one I know is Gateway that I can think of that he used to open up those portals in X-Men, and then in Contest of Champions there was an Aborigine guy that had the bolo the things he used to whip and he'd like take you into Dreamland in Contest of Champions. Those are the only three that come to mind. But maybe you can get me smarter when we talk on Collector's Corner, my friend. Thank you for the questions. And now let me jump into this could be a long ass episode for your holiday treat. So I'm going to be talking about comics week beginning August 13th through August 19th. And we'll start at the bottom like we always do. There were 33 comics that week. That's pretty decent. It's above my average of 26 or 25. We had two Marvel, one Dark Horse, six Boom, three Archie, three American Mythologies, two Alterna, and 16 Aftershock. Wow, a lot of independent stuff. So let's start at the bottom with the 3 out of 5s. We have I rated Unholy Grail number 1, really low, which is uninteresting because Unholy Grail 2 through 5 became a 5 out of 5. So it's just okay. I put number 1 here for whatever reason. Percival brings a Holy Grail back to the destroyed Camelot. Flashbacks to Merlin giving the kingdom to King Arthur when his father passes. It looks like a demon might have taken over Merlin on his way to assist the king. So that was a 3 out of 5, which means I liked it. Dark Arc number 1, which also started low and went higher. Noah is in one arc, and another arc contains all the mysterious creatures as led by this one guy. In order for them to survive, both arcs must survive. So you have one arc with humans and animals, two of each, and then one arc that has all the mystical creatures of Earth on it, and all the monsters. This one is run by a demon, where the other is by the Lord. Or at least that is how I'm interpreting this issue. That's what I wrote. The Unsound, 2 through 6. This one started off higher for me. It was a Cullen Bunn story. And then it went down to a 3 out of 5, but it started off, I think, either as a 5 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5. That sometimes happens. This one, I like the story a little more because it was more grounded in reality with the first issue, and then it kind of like turned into Crazy Town. But it turns out her mother is crazy, and this is the mother of the Blades. Her daughter may inherit that insanity. We have Edge of Spider-Geddon number 1. This has Hobie Brown as Hobie Brown is the Prowler, I believe. He's in our universe, but here he's as Spider-Punk fighting a conglomerate version of Kang, who stole his identity and made it a licensed property ha without his permission. Has a punk rock version of the Hulk as well. So we have Peter or Pink Panther Snow Day number 1. This was rated a 3 out of 5 from American Mythology. Pink Panther versus the Inspector in a sled competition. Pink Panther tries to enjoy his Sunday morning watching football, but keeps getting interrupted by the narrator, which is really classic Pink Panther storytelling. Really well done. Pink Panther goes up to a mountain to find the secret to happiness, but runs into an abominable snowman. We then had Carson of Venus, number 1, also from American Mythology Press. Two people are trying to return to their boat from an island of dinosaurs when they are teleported to Venus and have an adventure with Carson, who is very similar to John Carter, Warlord of Mars. It crosses over with three other Edgar Rice Burroughs comics that I did not got by, but I wanted to get after reading this. We then have the beginnings of the 4 out of 5s. We have Jughead the Hunger. Archie and Betty train number 2 through 4, by the way. Archie and Betty training to go after werewolves. Veronica and Reggie kill Weatherby. Jughead almost apprehended by, but another werewolf comes to save him. It introduced to Betty's aunt, who is a werewolf hunter who loves someone in the Jughead family. Veronica, Reggie, and Weatherby, and others that are turned to seek revenge on Jughead because they had become werewolves. Betty and Archie have their first confrontation with Jughead and his cousin. We then get into another American Mythology Press book. We got Beast Hunter X, number 1. There is a piranha monster in this town. A waitress is rescued from a vampire, only to find out that she's a werewolf. It was like crazy B film fun. We then get into Aftershock, which increased in my liking. Dark Arc number 2 through 9. A sorcerer is running the ship of mystical creatures, and the vampires try to take over the ship but fail. Angels then show up to help Noah and don't realize they're on the wrong ship. So they actually, instead of going to Noah's ship, they went to this other one with mythological creatures. The unicorns are killed when they try to ask for help from the angels before they leave. They're the only animal that's on that ship that is sort of out of place. The demon realizes the unicorns were never placed on the boat. So who put them on the boat? It wasn't, who put the unicorns on this boat? They didn't belong on the boat. The sorcerer tries to make a deal with Insananda, the mother of all monsters, but that does not work out so well. She summons the monsters on the ship and is going to eat all of the remaining humans. Then we then get into a Dark Horse book, Mari Hari, fantastic story about a fantastic character who was killed in front of a firing squad. Was she innocent or guilty? Seems to be up to interpretation, and I'm along for this journey for sure. We have Hot Lunch Special number 1. There is a profitable sandwich maker that is linked in with the mob. When they try to expand their business, the mob boss takes their trucks, even though they are underneath a special agreement. It looks like the son who is working late that night might be killed by the mob for doing this, for going behind their backs. Bone Parish number 1, this is the Boom Studios comic by Cullen Bunn. There is a new drug in town. This one is from famous corpses, and you can experience life through their eyes if you take their ashes. An excellent story and cast of characters. Mother runs a business and sees her husband through the drug, and she is running out of her husband's ash, so she may not be able to see him again. There is a huge demand for the drug, and the other gangsters want in. I really like this. 4 out of 5. Really enjoyed it. And then we get into the 5 out of 5s. From Alterna, my favorite Alterna comic, Tinseltown number 2 through 3. Abby meets a girlfriend, good friend, and they meet two cowboys who want to be in motion pictures. She learns to shoot a gun and almost kills a said animal by accident. Talks down a Hollywood star from committing... She actually talks down a Hollywood actor from committing suicide and stops a man from beating his kid because he dropped his ice cream cone. And this is she's basically a cop on a Hollywood lot, kind of like Universal Studios. Her boss, but this actually takes place in the 20s, so it's shifted a couple of years. Her boss recognizes this and invites her to a party where she runs into Betty again, who is in a very abusive and drug infested relationship with a movie producer because she wanted to get rich, and that guy abused her. We then get into another 5 out of 5, Fantastic Four number 1, the relaunch. This is by Superior Spider-Man guy, Dan Slott. I love this issue, by the way. The Thing proposes to Alicia. Reed, Sue, and the kids are thought dead. The FF signal goes up, and the Torch is excited as he finds out his 2 Yancey Street gang playing a joke on them. They get a signal from space, though, that Reed and Sue and family are alive, so they do get excited. Dr. Doom returns to his people at Latveria, a very emotional issue, and it packed a punch. I loved it. Very, very good issue. Unholy Grail number 2 through 5. So went from a 3 out of 5 to a 5 out of 5. Dark telling of King Arthur and Camelot, and I really loved it. I think you should check it out. The Lady in the Lake and all that good stuff. So that takes us to August 20th through August 26th. There were 21 comics read, 5 Marvel, 3 Image, 1 Gold Key, 10 DC, and 2 Archie. We'll start at the bottom at 4 out of 5s. There were no 3 out of 5s that week. Superman number 2. Superman is trying to keep the Earth together as he knows it, as it is in the Phantom Zone with Rogel Zar. A great scene where he's thinking about a question Ollie asked him about his life was hell because he can hear everything and hear every disaster. It shows he also sees the great things in humanity as well, through that hearing. So instead of it being a curse, sometimes it's a blessing. A scene of Rogel Zar in the past taking on Temerians, and that's Starfire's race. We then get into an image Spawn number 59 and 60. Wynn finds out about Terry. Spawn confronts Terry because they are not getting information out of the Major that they captured in the previous issues. Cyan is kidnapped by Violator, who is pretending to be Spawn. So that's actually Al's daughter. So Wanda feels Spawn betrayed them and convinces the cops to go and take down Spawn. Spawn finds out Cyan is missing and goes after Violator and makes him pay. And Cyan is returned to Wanda and Terry. So then we have West Coast Avengers Volume 2, Number 1. Kate is in California and trying to form a superhero team after they had a run-in with land sharks. They have a run-in with a giant-sized tigra as their first mission. This one has Gwenpool. It has an Inhuman. I can't remember his name. It has both Hawkeyes. It was a lot of fun. It was a really entertaining first issue. Challengers of the Unknown, 82, Volume 1. Well, of course it's Volume 1. The other volumes didn't have near as much issues. The group goes to find a man who can help the professor who is dying. He turns out to be a cult leader who is making sacrifices to this strange demon. Red and Ace go steal a device while June and Rocky are captured. Rocky manages to escape and meet up with his team, but they find June is about to be sacrificed by that cult. We have a Gold Key comic. You don't often hear me talk about Gold Key, but I read Mars Patrol number 4, and I've because of this issue, I went back and bought all of Mars Patrol, so now I have a complete collection. You probably heard that on a weekly read. We have the group has to go to the Antarctic to fight the Baldies, who are trying to take over their military bases and capabilities. The Mars team reclaims the base. It has a cool intermission with funnies and riddles, and they're in the middle of the story. What I mean is like Mad Magazine cartoons in between, just to like have intermissions between the chapters in the comic, which is really unique. I really liked it. We then have Jughead the Hunger number 4 and 5. Jughead goes to try and help get help from Archie. Archie asks help from Betty as Jughead's dog is killed by Veronica. Veronica was turned to a werewolf by Jughead. Reggie captures Jelly Bean. Jelly Bean is Jughead's sister. They are preparing to rescue Jelly Bean. We then get into the Unnatural number 2 from Image Comics. The main character has to go to a clinic to meet someone and she's supposed to mate with. She's the one that's having fantasies about having sex. She's the pig lady that's having fantasies about having sex with the wolf, which is forbidden in this world. You can't crossbreed. It tells her backstory as a child as she walks in and sees her mom having sex with the wolf, which could explain her desires and dreams. Her friend tries to go to the library to find more information on why her friend is having these desires and dreams. Someone is following our main character with a gun. We then get to Batman 277. Bruce is in Florida with his girlfriend and reads about a sea monster nearby. He and his girlfriend are attacked, and he goes back as Batman to find out what is going on and gets framed for murder. Bruce is in jail, but he breaks out and finds out these guys and the monster are drug smugglers. He gets knocked out and put in a trap where he could drown, but it takes out the group and then frees Wayne because he is now not guilty. We have Plastic Man number 1 through 3. This is Gail Simone Plastic Man, the current one. It's sort of a retelling of Plaz's origin in this world. His friends are being killed, and he is framed for one murder as he is trying to protect a young kid from an evil organization. He has a run-in with Man-Bat. Really good sense of humor, and the supporting cast is from a strip club that is very entertaining. Miss Marvel, number 1 through 3. Carol Danvers, and this is volume 1, by the way. Carol Danvers moves to Union, and I read these off of Marvel Unlimited. I tried to Get my Marvel Unlimited and DC Universe books read on there, so I make it worthwhile to have these services. Carol Danvers moves to New York for a woman's magazine published by J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah, that's J. Jonah Jameson publishing a woman's magazine. She keeps having headaches, and when she does, she passes out, and Miss Marvel takes over. She foils the Scorpion when he tries to kill Jameson, and he blames Jameson for the suit, and that goes back to Amazing Spider-Man. She has a run-in with AIM and the Destructor, who seems to know that she's actually a Kree. She does stop a missile launch headed for the Cape. She does eventually find out about her past, and she visits where she got her powers. The psychologist she is seeing knows her identity. We then get into the 5 out of 5s. Batman 53. So you see, Tom King is all over the map for me. Sometimes he's a 2, sometimes he's a 5. Bruce convinces the jury that Batman is not a god and makes mistakes. The jury does not convict Mr. Freeze. An excellent discussion of religion by Bruce, where he falls on it. And I really enjoyed this arc, and I've been enjoying this since issue 50, which has kind of changed my opinion of the series. We then get into a Marvel book, Immortal Hulk number 4, 5 out of 5. The McGee goes after Walter Lichtkowski, who's Sasquatch, to get more information of Bruce Banner as she is trying to track down the story on the Hulk. While he tries to stop the fight in a bar, he is stabbed in the back. In surgery, Sasquatch, Walter, he changes back to Sasquatch and seems to have lost control. And he's also gamma radiated, if you know him from the Alpha Flight. Banner shows up at the hospital to try to help and runs into McGee. Mrs. McGee, you won't like me when I'm angry. We then get into the 5 out of 5, Hawkman 1 through 3. This is the Venditti series. Hawkman is searching for answers about his past, and he finds not only is he resurrected across time, but also space. It has an Indiana Jones vibe, and he is digging up old relics trying to find answers. Madame Xanadu helps him, and he has a run-in with himself in the past. He also goes to Dinosaur Island and runs into Carter Hall. Has a great amount of people that support him throughout the world because Hawkman saved relatives of theirs in the past. Absolutely fantastic. 5 out of 5. We then get into the final week, which takes us into September. Man, I'm almost catching up, man. 2 more months. I think in a couple weeks I'll be caught up. It's been quite the journey. Had a total of 20 comics. One was a Pat Broderick Kickstarter, 5 Marvel, 4 Image, 8 Devil's Due, 1 Archie, and 1 Alterna. We'll start all everything in this particular week was a 4 out of 5. There were no 3 out of 5s, and there were no 5 out of 5s. We have Eden number 1. Earth is defeated by aliens, and there's only one safe haven, Eden. A group of 3 people go out to try to rescue the leaders. Soon from a group of aliens. It's really got fantastic art. We have Nibiru. That's the Pat Broderick book. I bought this from Pat Broderick at a local convention. This is actually in Colorado Springs. And it's about how the Sumerian gods made it to Earth looking for resources from the planet Nibiru that is in dire shape, basically because of lack of resources. It's also presented in landscape. So I don't know if he did it digitally and then decided to publish it. I did not support the Kickstarter, and I'm kind of glad because I know people that supported it. Yep, Kirk. And he never got his book. So I actually got his book by not buying the Kickstarter and getting the book from a convention, which is my no-no about Kickstarters. The Beef, 2 through 5. This one. Why did I rate a 4 out of 5? Man, that should have been a 3 out of 5. This made it really hard to eat meat. But the Beef defeats the bad guys by calling on the powers of the cow. A book that describes the gory detail of how cows are treated in the meat industry and milk industry, and it makes you never want to eat meat again. We then get into Archie comic, The Mighty Crusaders, Volume 4, Number 1. The Second Shield puts the new shield in charge of the new team to defeat a dinosaur villain. The Web rejoins, and Darkling is a member. We have a Marvel. We can go to Marvel. Rogue and Gambit 2 through 5. This was an underdog. I didn't previously pre-order it. I don't even know how I got there. How did I get there? I think what happened. Okay, I gotta describe this to you because I'm full of shit and I have to tell stories all the time. But I think I didn't order this. I didn't pre-order it. But what happened is I was reading X-Men Gold and I fell in love with that story arc and I wanted to find out why they had gotten married. Either that or I heard a podcast about, or might have heard Rob say they got married instead of two other characters that were supposed to get married, and I wanted to know what led to this. And I got this miniseries and I was very happily surprised. But this is Rogue and Gambit 2 through 5. They discuss their first meeting with each other with kind of like a marriage counselor, a relationship counselor that's actually they're in a relationship retreat that's known for stalking mutants, so they're like undercover. Her friends find her body blah, blah, blah. Where was I? They discuss their first meeting with each other and they have a different times because Gambit includes their first meeting when they were under the control of the Shadow King. They end up fighting clones and golems of themselves and mutants. There's a strange little girl that might be tied to this, but I was confused about that part. What I loved was them bonding over their failures and successes of their relationship, and it kind of led to their marriage, so that's pretty cool. Miss Marvel number 4. This is off of the Marvel Unlimited, and by the way, I do own all the Miss Marvels. I'm just reading it off of Miss the iPad. She battles the Doomsday Monster and manages to defeat it at the Cape. Her friends find her body at the Cape as Carol Danvers was sent there to write an article about her. After defeating the Doomsday Robot, she has a run-in with the Destructor, who has escaped from AIM. He is losing his powers and opens up a box that makes him lose control at the site where Miss Marvel got her powers, and she is dosed with even more radiation. We then get into we talked about me just completing a series from Sirius, and it was that Ken Schafer, and this is another book that the top 4 out of 5 was Malefic 1 through 8. I read the whole thing. The doctor is having sex with a patient who is a serial killer, inherits her father's asylum. She is shamed by the community, but an unknown church wants her to run the asylum. She goes there and is amazed of what her father did and wants to undo it all. This leads to Patient 11, who is really the devil, and she manipulates her to the very, very end of the story. The doctor changes all the treatments to all of the killers. Two of the killers are working in the asylum, and her father has cured Eric and the nurse. The nurse is really a man that became a woman. The nurse. After her father treated her by changing her into a woman, strange technologies as the elixir can extract a soul from the body. She uses the device to extract a soul from a possessed patient, and it puts it into a rape doll. This is a weird doll that is used for to make the rapists feel guilty, and I guess they use these rape dolls. I wonder if that's a real thing. That's a creepy shit. One patient is a neurologist who likes to fuck dead brains and thinks he runs in the asylum. So this guy actually was a doctor in real life that was in a morgue, and he would take the brain and fuck it. That's his sick. There's a lot of crazy shit that's introduced in this little. One killed everyone at her school, so that's another girl. Another can read minds when his blindfold is taken off. Another patient wears a mask for his sanity, and she fucks him thinking it was Eric, but was manipulated by patient 11, who's the devil. Another who is an exhibitionist, an actress who killed her competition. This leads to the final confrontation, where she regains control of the asylum by putting the possessed girl into the devil. So much other strangeness to discuss with this book, but that's the summary of it. I think it's also available in trade if you're interested. Malefic from Devil's Due Publishing. That takes us to the end. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch. I am Mike at comicbooknoise.com on the emails. And you can get me on Facebook under Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, follow all the episode threads there. And another good place to reach me is at the website at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can leave comments there and I will check them. Most of them are spam there, but I do check them and I accept them if they're legit. So I want to thank you for listening, and I will see you in a week when we'll talk about some more weekly reads and who knows, more comics I've purchased. I don't know, more questions. Who knows what we'll be talking about, but you'll hear me talking to myself into a mic for at least an hour. I'll talk to you later, and I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving week. I just gotta find the stop button.